Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, July 17th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr., and joining me is host of PS I Love You XOXO, Greg Miller.
Hello, Blessing. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, man?
I'm not good. I'm not well.
No? Oh, no.
I'm in that thing we all know all too well. And it's the, as a video game fan, I think it's the most hated feeling. It is that post-game depression. Where I have beaten Ghost of Tsushima, I have platinumed Ghost of Tsushima, there is nothing left to do in Ghost of Tsushima, and it's one of my favorite games of the year, and now I'm trying to play a million other things, and it's just like, yeah, this isn't what I want to do right now. You know what I mean? And you're like, you keep going, it's all Goldilocks, like, yeah, this isn't, I don't know about this. You start making lists now, of what you want to play, what you want to do.
I feel like you're the kind of man who has a big backlog.
I do. Like you know that.
Yeah. What have you tried out so far?
Well, you know, first off, that I run hot and cold. Like, I run on emotion. I need to be in the mood for something. And that's why we talked about it the other day, right? I downloaded Mass Effect Andromeda. I was like, I just did this Star Trek and review stuff. I actually want to go into space and explore a bit. I haven't played Mass Effect since launch when it was all, like, eye faces like that and, like, people crouch walking for no reason. I was like, I know they had fixed that stuff. Let's do that again. First off, I was surprised to install and start up Mass Effect and find out I played, like, 8 hours of it the first time. I was like, that was a lot for me for a game that I don't remember at all. So I started that up, and like, the combat's what I want, but then everything surrounding it's so like, meh, you know what I mean? So it's like, man, I don't know what I'm doing. Then I was like, I played We Should Talk. It's a new game. It's out right now. Just came out this week. It's on everything. I'm playing it on PlayStation. Hold on, We Should Talk.
I don't think I've heard of this one.
It's good. It's short. It's one of my normal, it's like a one night stand kind of thing. Okay. Where it's you picking dialogue options. You know what I mean? But they do it in a really cool visual style. Here, hold on. If this link in the press release is smart, it'll go to a trailer. No, it went to a video. Kevin, get me the trailer for We Should Talk video game. And so it's cool that it's you in a bar. You have your phone, and then there's three different people you talk to: the bartender, your ex-boyfriend, and then a guy who gets stood up on a Tinder date. And so when they talk to you, you choose what you want to say, but rather than just pick a line of dialogue, think of it like a combination lock where there's like three segments of things. So you pick the opener, you pick the middle, you pick the end, and that leads to different results and stuff like that, let alone how you're interact. Oh, I'm sorry, there's also your girlfriend on the phone, so like you have four different people you're talking to, I guess, but the options for the conversations are different based on what you've done in that run, obviously, with your girlfriend on the phone, or what you said to the bartender, or what you said to your ex-boyfriend, or stuff like that. And so you go through and make those choices. Here it is. Thank you so much, Kev. It's super short, but I mean, it's meant to be played multiple times. I think there's 9 endings to it, from the home screen on it or whatever. So I played that a bunch and got a couple of the different endings, and it's gonna be easy platinum with a walkthrough or whatever, because it's just like, you know, talk to Sam about her husband or father, talk to this about that. So it's like
just going through all the different dialogue choices.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also one of those I enjoyed, and it's short enough that I was like, yeah, I'm not gonna. Well, first off, there's no guide out yet, but I was also like, I'm not gonna sit here and just do it over and over and over again. Hashtag Fun Time is out too. That's a twin stick shooter that's like all neon and arcadey and stuff, and has different challenges to it. Made by a Kind of Funny best friend, full disclosure. They had sent us codes. I enjoy that too, but that's not what I'm looking for either. I of course did the thing, Blessing, and I downloaded Persona 5 Royal. So it's sitting
there. That was gonna be my suggestion. Like, so Persona 5 is just waiting for you.
But it's the same thing of like, here, I mean, I am in the mood for Avengers. I am in the mood for Assassin's Creed Valhalla. And I know already from playing 35 hours of Persona 5 non-royal that is not what this is. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's not that I want open world, third person action RPG combat. I want fucking Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, right? And I still have to wait another month for that too. So it's this thing of what drew me in about starting up Mass Effect was I know that combat, and I'm like, I can vibe with that content for a while. You know what I mean? Going through, get your powers up, using different guns, stuff like that. But then again, like I said, around it, the Pathfinder stuff, I'm just like, this isn't exactly hitting how I want it to hit. So I'm in this like pouty mood where I'm just like, everything's, I want to get back to platinuming Iron Man VR, right? But it's like, do I want to drag the VR out and reconnect everything? And it's like, then you start thinking about it too. It's like an entire playthrough on hard, which I will do eventually, but it's like, that's Iron Man VR is a game I'm gonna have to play when Jen goes to bed. So I'm now chipping away at it, an hour and a half, 2 hours at a time. It's like, yeah. And then I was like, well, I got to get back to Minecraft And I'm like, I got to set up a Minecraft date with Joey to go through dungeons and get the platinum in that or whatever. I'm trying to set that up right now because what I want to do today, Bless, is that even when we don't, this is behind the curtain for everybody else, even when we don't live stream the recording of a show, you know what I mean? Similar to today when we record the Kinda Funny X-Cast, that's not being shown to anybody, but we do a live backup recording just in case anything went wrong. There'd be a backup somewhere in the cloud that obviously if you're logged in as Kinda Funny, you can watch. So I've hit up Joey, yeah, and she's down. We're going to watch that together and then play Minecraft there and do that.
Oh.
But that's what I'm looking at. It's the same thing, too. Like, yeah. There's new Borderlands DLC out that everybody's
right
like.
Now, it sounds like you got an embarrassment of riches right now where you can go any which way and you just have an appetite for a specific thing.
Blessing, that is the sad thing. I have the silver spoon. You know what I mean? And yeah. I should be. And it's just. But again, it's not these games that the problem is. The problem isn't here, right?
Yeah,
because I just want to. What do I want to do? I want to chase more foxes. I want to cut more people up. I want, you know what I mean? I want Nate Fox to just give me an endless supply of Ghost of Tsushima. But the supply has run out. You know what I mean? Now I wait 7 years for another game.
Yeah, I'm sort of in a similar place to where now that I've finished Ghost of Tsushima, I've kind of winded down on it to where I've been trying to balance the idea of, okay, do I want to platinum this thing or. Mm-hmm. Should I just leave it? Because I've gotten past the story. I'm now just in the open world and I'm feeling myself start to get into that process of things starting to get repetitive and me not being as into it. And so like that's how I got into Superliminal, which I talked about on PS Love You. And I've been ping-ponging back and forth through quite a few different games. One of them now being Persona 5 Royal. Like I'm back into it and I recommend. I mean, that's one that I will continue to push onto you.
It's going to happen.
Are you?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Because that game, Persona 5, came out 3 years ago.
I know. And again, I played 30 fucking hours of it. It's not like I didn't touch it. All right, buddy? Yeah, you know, back off over here, kid. All right?
Persona,
if he wasn't for me,
hours,
you wouldn't even know what fuck Persona was. Persona wouldn't be a thing in the West without Greg Miller, all right? Fucking, I kept the Vita alive for how long? I'm so old, Blessing. Remember, I was playing them on PS2 for IGN, all right? You shut your fucking mouth. You don't know what you're talking about. All right? Had enough of this crap.
Good. It's so good. Joey Noel writes in. To patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, yesterday during Kevin's pancake delivery, Blessing said, quote, I've been watching a lot of coyote related comedy, end quote. And I would like more information on that. And this is something that I totally forgot about after the episode until Joey brought it up. Because this is the thing that I brought up for like 0.5 seconds as we're ping-ponging through our opening for KFGD. Because Kevin, both me and Kevin were saying different things at the same time. And both of them were on wildly different spectrums of, okay, we got to tackle this. And Kevin's took priority because Kevin was mentioning like Boysenberry or whatever.
Well, and it was, again, remember, it sounded like if you're just a listener, it sounded like he was fucking at an IHOP. Yeah. he's running the show from a booth. Somebody comes over. All right, here are your pancakes. Can I get a Boysenberry syrup? What's that?
Yeah. And so that got priority. And then I started to see a lot of people be like, all right, but what's this coyote related comedy business that Blessing is up
to?
Yeah,
explain.
And so just to explain it very quickly, because it's not anything too deep. It's not like there's a wild story. It's not like I've been marathoning Wile E. Coyote for the last month or so. Basically, I've been like checking out a lot of different shows on Netflix recently. One of them is a show called Never Have I Ever, which is a really good show. But yeah, like basically that show has an episode of it where the main character encounters a coyote in like a backyard, which weirdly enough exactly mirrors an episode of a different show that I've also been watching, Love on Netflix, which I love Love on Netflix. It's a show that I've appreciated forever. And there are multiple shows called Love on Netflix. And so I'm talking about the comedy with Britta from Community, not the other Love on Netflix, which is very like very much like this graphic other sort of thing. But for the comedy Love, that show also has a scene related to somebody seeing a coyote in the backyard and being on drugs and all this different stuff. And so like that was mainly what I was referencing for people who are curious about the coyote related comedy.
I would throw it out there, even though it's a fox, Fleabag season 2. There's fox.
Oh,
comedy,
you're
in there.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I saw this go through, I thought that's what it was referenced to. And then I was like, wait, that's a fox. And I was very confused. Do you want to know the other thing, Blessing?
What's that?
Switching back to my thing, because I don't give a shit about Joey's question. Right? I also had this thought last night when I'm sitting there in bed. I can't go to sleep. And I'm like, what should it be? What am I going to do? Thought about Sleeping Dogs Definitive Edition. Why not boot that fucker back up? Because that was a great game.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with Sleeping Dogs.
Kind of like, feels like it might check the boxes here. Is, you know what I mean? Open world and run around shooting stuff.
Oh, I can see that. Damn. All right. I mean, Assassin's Creed's coming soon. This is the thing that gets... I mean, soon as in this year. This is the thing that gets me, is that you just finished playing that type of experience. You just played a big old open world game and platinumed it.
Yeah.
And you're not tired. You're not like, oh man, I need some smaller palate cleansers.
No. Well, I mean, like, I don't know. It's just that depression. You know, it's the same thing people have when they go to PAX. And then you come home from PAX and you're no longer with all your friends. Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, all right, well, this is life and it's good, but like, you know.
Greg, enough about open world games and coyotes and all the ridiculous shit we just talked about for 10 minutes. Today's stories include June NPD sales, Microsoft discontinuing Xbox One X, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. I still get nervous when I bang the desk because I see the camera wobbling and I'm like, today's the day. Today's
like the day where everything like you're out of the ocean.
Yeah. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in. And silver members or above, get the show ad free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, the Kinda Funny XCast kicks off Saturday at 6 a.m. Pacific time on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and on podcast services. So get your questions in now on kindafunny.com/patreon. Of course, that's Snowback Mike, Alana Pierce, and Gary Witta. They're recording today. And Greg, is it a live recording? Can people watch that live on Patreon?
We already talked about this. No, it's a private one. XCast, since it's a pilot program and we are feeling a lot of stuff out with it and schedules are crazy, we're not doing that for during the 6-week pilot. If it becomes full time, maybe we'll talk about it and figure it out.
Yes. And so get your questions in now, because they will be recording tomorrow for the episode that goes up. Or they'll be recording today for the episode that goes up tomorrow.
But you still have time.
You still have time. Remember, kindafunny.com/store has a bunch of great shit. If you like merch, if you like shirts, if you like sweatshirts, if you like glasses, if you like glasses. Not like the seeing glasses. I'm talking about the drinking glasses. If you like those, you like hats, you like merch, kindafunny.com/store has what you need. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed Mohammed and Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by youtube.com/kindafunnygames, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have four stories today.
A Baker's Dozen.
Starting with our number one, Greg.
Hello.
Would it surprise you to know that The Last of Us Part 2 continues to kill it in sales?
Not in the least.
Not in the least. This is Adam Bankhurst at IGN who writes, and this is essentially their write-up for this last month's NPD sales. So NPD for June. The Last of Us Part 2 was June 2020's best-selling game and has now become the third best-selling game of the year, the eighth best-selling game of the 12-month period ending in June, and has the highest launch month dollar sales of any 2020 release to date. As revealed by the NPD Group's Matt Piscatella, The Last of Us Part 2's first month sales have surpassed other games such as Final Fantasy VII Remake, Animal Crossing New Horizons, and Doom Eternal to claim the top spot. The Last of Us Part 2, which also became the fastest selling PS4 exclusive with over 4 million copies sold in its first 3 days, only trails Marvel Spider-Man for the biggest launch month for a Sony published game. And I'm going to add there for my own editorializing that remember that The Last of Us Part 2 came out June 19th. And I believe this sales period ends like very early July, whereas Spider-Man, the month it came out way earlier in the month. And so Spider-Man had more days counted in essentially that sales period. Rounding out the top five for June 2020 are Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Animal Crossing New Horizons, Grand Theft Auto V, and Mortal Kombat 11. Perhaps the most impressive jump, however, was Ring Fit Adventure, which made it to number 7 after ranking number 835 last month due to stock shortages. The full list of June 2020's top 20 best-selling games is as follows. And I'm going to start from number 20. So this is June 2020 best-selling games. At number 20, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. 19, SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated. That's number 18,
there you go,
Persona 4 Golden.
Bush, you dopes. You know what I mean? Out there, yeah. Persona 4. Hell yeah.
Wild how only selling two copies gets you a number 19, right?
It was a slow month. Everybody's buying Last of Us.
Exactly. But yeah, number 18, Persona 4 Golden. Number 17, Woo! Need for Speed Heat. Number 16, Borderlands 3. Number 15, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. Number 14, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Number 13, Minecraft PlayStation 4 Edition. Number 12, Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege. Number 11, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Number 10, Minecraft Dungeons. Number 9, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Number 8, NBA 2K20. Number 7, Ring Fit Adventure. Number 6, Red Dead Redemption 2. At number 5, Mortal Kombat 11. Number 4, Grand Theft Auto 5. Number 3, Animal Crossing New Horizons. Number 2, Call of Duty Modern Warfare. And sitting at number 1, The Last of Us Part 2. Greg, does any of that surprise you?
I think it's great to see Minecraft Dungeons at number 10. You know, that's a fun game. A goofy, you know, dungeon crawler. Again, obviously the Minecraft name helps, but in general, it's a fun game as well. But outside of that, I mean, I think it's awesome to see Persona 4 Golden pop up at number 18. Obviously, that Steam release coming out, helping it out quite a bit. SpongeBob hanging on, sure. And then, Last of Us Part 2 being at number 1. I think that makes sense. I think Animal Crossing continue to be at number 3 again. Hell yeah. We're at that point right now, right, where I think a lot of this was predictable. I think it gets interesting, Bless, and I don't mean to deviate the conversation if there's more you want to say on this, is looking ahead to July's NPD, where do you think Ghost of Tsushima is going to fall?
Oh, these are good questions. It's an interesting question. I mean, I'm going to say top five, but
top five
kind of where that kind of breaks down, because, like, does it get number one? Last of Us Part Two releasing later in June throws an interesting wrench in this, because I expect to see Last of Us Part Two in the best selling games again, but how high do I expect to see that also?
I think that's especially top in comparison five, to too.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I expect to see Ghost at like the number 3 spot.
Yeah, see, that sounds,
that's being my prediction.
That sounds right to me too. Of course, I'm always bad at NPD. We used to do an actual competition at IGN on a whiteboard, and I was always awful at it. So you shouldn't take anything I say to the bank by any stretch of the imagination. But that sounds right. And a ringing endorsement, of course, of why you should only buy digital games, and it's silly to still go to the store. In the chat, Boars and Double Zero said, I just got here because what is insane was Target in my area got zero copies of Ghosts, and I don't think they're going to get any in this month. I had to go to hunt one at Best Buy. That's always fun.
That's crazy.
Try to start your day buying a video game. You got to go hunt around, dig around, drive different stores, eat up them fossil fuels, expose yourself to COVID. Just download.
I'm looking back at the list now, and I'm trying to think of the games that are coming out this month. And actually, now the more and more I think about it, the more and more I can see Ghost and Last was taking the number 1 and number 2 spot. In either order. But like,
you think Ghost could be the number 1 selling game for July?
I mean, I could see it. Like, what's the competition, really, aside from Last of Us?
And I think it's the Last of Us, yeah.
Yeah, I think Last of Us is the only other one that I think is still... Like, Last of Us is going to continue to sell super well. But, like, a big part... And, of course, like, this is only a small part of it, but also, like, a part of why Last of Us Part 2 is selling so well is because everybody is at home playing video games, buying video games. Like, we're seeing software sales get this bump this year because there's not much else for people to do. And so... Last of Us Part 2 is going to continue to sell well because of that, but Ghost of Tsushima is probably going to sell well also because of that. And so, you know, those in the top two, I think, is kind of easy. But then, like, where does Paper Mario land and all that?
Yeah. I don't think Paper Mario is going to have a... I don't think it's going to have a giant opening. I don't think it's going to... I mean, Paper Mario, I would say top 10, but I don't think top 5.
Yeah. And that's where I'm at, too, is Paper Mario, I can see a top 10. Yeah, I can see that. To round out this IGN write-up regarding NPD, they continue, June 2020's tracked spending across video game hardware, software, accessories, and game cards totaled $1.2 billion, which is a 26% increase from June 2019. Persona 4 Golden, which was released on Steam in June 2020, made it up to number 18 for June 2020. Nintendo Switch was once again the best-selling hardware for June 2020, although hardware spending declined 17% when compared to June 2019, which I think that all makes sense, given that like we're reaching that wind up, or I guess wind down toward next generation. But then for Switch specifically, like there was not really any big Switch title that came out in June, and so I think it makes sense when you're comparing it to last year, where we got Mario Maker 2 in June. Like it makes sense for Switch not to have sold as much this time around.
Hold on, we're gonna call in an expert here. All right.
Well, is it Jeffy Grubgrub?
It's Jeffy Grubgrub. Jeffy Grubgrub's in the chat arguing against everything we're saying.
Really? Mm-hmm. I gotta give a shout out to Jeffy Grubgrub because he slid into my DMs this morning with the VentureBeat article for NPD, as he does during these days. And
I appreciate that. I wanted to
reference his, but I had IGNs first. And
stuff. Jeffy Grubgrub, it's Greg Miller. You're live on Kind of Funny Games Daily. You know, because you're in the chat. I see you arguing. What is your NPD for July breakdown prediction here? Where are we wrong?
You're right. Look, okay, so top five, for a game to get in the top five, it usually has to outsell Grand Theft Auto V, which is always like the barrier for whether or not a new game is successful. If a new game comes out and doesn't outsell Grand Theft Auto V, I consider it a failure. And I think there's no way that Paper Mario doesn't come out and doesn't like at least break that sort of glass ceiling sort of thing. So it's going to come out. It's probably going to be number three after Last of Us, and then Ghost of Tsushima will probably be number one. The only reason it wouldn't be is because Nintendo doesn't share digital numbers with NPD. Mm-hmm. So if more people are buying it digitally, maybe it does fall out of the top five. But I really, really doubt it. People are like, look around, guys. People are wild for Nintendo stuff right now. The Switch continues to sell like crazy. There hasn't been anything really huge since Animal Crossing. People want new games. Even if people aren't like super hot on this particular Paper Mario, I still bet it's going to sell really well. So basically, I just want to say, God, how can you guys be so wrong all the time?
First off, you're just predicting as well, sir. So we'll see. All right. I knew, of course, Nintendo doesn't share the digital sales, which is one of the reasons I was including it this way. Also, yes, people are hot on Nintendo, hot on the Switch, hot on Animal Crossing. I just don't think they're that hot on Paper Mario.
I think we're going to see.
All right, I'm going to write this down.
Yes, go ahead. Someone make a nanobiologist do some more unpaid work.
We love him. We love abusing him and calling him a Kind of Funny best friend. It's perfect. All right, we'll see. You say top five. I say no.
He's saying number three.
All right, well, I got to hold on. Yeah, so Blessing's been paying attention. I got to put you down, which means they won't hear you. So like,
no worries.
We understand. We love you, Jeff. Thanks for being a fan.
Yeah, have a good one, guys. Bye.
All right, bye.
He's saying Ghosts, Last of Us, Paper Mario in that order. And I respect it. I don't know if I agree. I mean, I think Ghosts and Last of Us for sure. I think Paper Mario lands itself in the top 10 somewhere. But that's mainly because of the digital thing also. Mm-hmm. And also because like it's Paper Mario. Like people love Mario, of course. People love Paper Mario for the most part. But modern Paper Mario, I feel like, doesn't hit the same way that like a Thousand Year Door would. But who knows?
All right, hold on. So I'm saying...
You're writing all this down.
Yeah, I'm writing it down. And it's interesting because it's like how weird bets get in general. I'm saying it's in the top... Paper Mario is in the top 10. I don't think it's in the top five.
You don't think it's in the top five?
Yeah. It sounds crazy when you say it out loud.
Because in the top five, all it would have to beat would be Grand Theft Auto V and probably Mortal Kombat 11. Animal Crossing New Horizons.
Yeah.
And Call of Duty Modern Warfare, actually. Yeah.
I'll stick with it because I already said it. Top 10, not top 5. Where are you right now? Jeff says Ghost, Last of Us, Paper Mario in that order. Blessing,
I say Ghost, Last of Us, and Paper Mario at number 4 or 5.
Okay. All right. We'll check back in a month.
Greg. Story number two. This is something that came up late in the show yesterday because this is breaking as we were going. Microsoft has discontinued the Xbox One X and the Xbox One S digital edition. This is from Tom Warren at The Verge, who writes, Microsoft is officially halting production of its Xbox One X and Xbox One S all digital edition consoles. Quote, as we ramp into the future with Xbox Series X, we're taking the natural step of stopping production on Xbox One X and Xbox One S. End quote, says the Microsoft spokesperson in a statement to The Verge. Xbox One S will continue to be manufactured and sold globally. Reports of Xbox One X and Xbox One S shortages have surfaced in recent weeks, and there has been an increased demand in Microsoft and Sony's current gen consoles during the pandemic. While production is ending on the Xbox One X and the Xbox One S digital edition, it's likely that stock for some retailers will still be available in the coming months. Quote, gamers can check with their local retailers for more details on Xbox One hardware availability, end quote, says a Microsoft spokesperson. The Xbox One S All Digital Edition was only launched in April last year as a diskless version of the Xbox One S. Reports have suggested that sales were strong for this particular console, and Microsoft even bundled it as part of the $19.99 monthly Xbox All Access subscription that includes Xbox Game Pass Ultimate Access. Microsoft is planning to continue its Xbox All Access subscriptions for the Xbox Series X launch later this year, offering subscribers an opportunity to upgrade to the new console. The software maker is also expected to launch a cheaper, less powerful next-gen Xbox. Codenamed Lockhart, this second Xbox is likely to form a big part of Microsoft's pricing approach for its next-gen Xbox plans. Greg,
yeah,
what's your reaction to all of this?
Awesome. I think that I don't want there to be, for Xbox going forward, too much confusion. You've had all this time to buy these boxes, to buy the Xbox One X, right? Why would we worry about that at this point, right? Like, you are about to launch the Series X. That is going to take the place of the Xbox One X in this pantheon of Xboxes, in the Xbox ecosystem of, hey, for the, you know, at least couple of years, you're going to be able to play all the first party games on, you know, any one of the Xboxes. So who cares? I think that it makes so much sense to start eliminating some of them and make it easy when you go in, that there's the Xbox Series X, which is on the high end of the spectrum. There's the Xbox One S, of course, that's still happening, like they're talking about globally. But then really the question becomes, where is that Lockhart? Is that Lockhart prediction? You know what I mean? The streaming box, the no disc, no whatever, just get it and get have a thing for your Xbox. Is that even on the other end of the spectrum? Is it past the Xbox One S where it is like, here's one for $99?
Yeah. And that is the big question. But I'm with you that I think this definitely points to Lockhart and the place that they expect that console to take between the Xbox Series X and now what we have as the base Xbox One or the Xbox One S. I have a question here from Malcontent Ronan, who writes in and says, with the discontinuation of the Xbox One X now guaranteeing the existence of Lockhart, do you believe the rumors of what it supposedly will be? You know, the part where it's targeting 1080p to provide that budget price. Because if true, this news may prove to be a truly awful move on the part of Microsoft. Keeping the One X could have provided a budget option versus Xbox Series. Instead, the One S is firmly the last generation, and Lockhart is your only actual budget option this fall. Do you think the rumors are entirely wrong and we're going to get a 4K console at $300? Just doesn't seem like both of those are possible. We know it exists, but what do you think Lockhart actually will be? Thanks. So this is an interesting question because I feel like, because Malcontent Ronan is pointing to rumors of Lockhart being a 1080p thing. I feel like regarding Lockhart, I've heard all of the rumors. I feel like people have kind of like done like a spreadsheet of like, okay, yeah, it's going to be a 1080p thing. Oh, no, it's going to be a digital thing. Oh, no, it's just going to be an Xbox One X. Oh, no, it's going to be this. And I don't feel like anybody's really provided a concrete idea or answer to what Lockhart is going to be, which I think could really like make or break exactly what they're trying to do here. And so, like, for me, I don't necessarily think Microsoft is trying to do let me not say all digital, because I think they could go all digital, but I don't think they're trying to make a streaming box. I think that's more of a future plan. I think that is years down the line. I don't think we're at a place yet where Microsoft feels comfortable putting out a box that is mainly used for xCloud yet.
What do you think Lockhart is? What is Lockhart to you then?
I mean, I would just say like a weaker box, right? Like it could be an all digital edition kind of thing. Especially since they're discontinuing the Xbox One S digital console. And we know that console has done relatively well in sales. I could see this kind of taking the place of that while also being this higher powered thing. If I had to make a specific prediction, I'm going to say a digital box that is slightly less powered than the Xbox Series X.
I thought you just said you didn't believe in the digital box.
I didn't. Oh, I don't believe in the streaming box. Yeah.
Gotcha.
What about you?
You figure right now, Xbox One X, $400. Xbox One S, $300. So you have to start playing this game of when you introduce the SKUs, what does that mean for prices? So to get rid of the X, right? Now we're talking about Xbox Series X, and that's at least $400. I think we all know it'll be more. So $500, $499, somewhere in there, right? than $300 for an Xbox One S. And so let's, and I'm playing fast and loose with this, but there's a $200 price difference there. It gets you to this interesting conversation that you're having with what is Lockhart exactly, right? And is Lockhart a streaming box that's its whole purpose and that's what it's going? And then I think it's below $300. And granted, I think the Xbox One S would probably get a price drop in the middle of this, below that. But if it's just a digital box like you're talking, then I think it's going up from Xbox One S. And so now it is this bridge between what you put it at $400, we'll say. So $300 for Xbox One S, $400 for Lockhart, $500 for Series X. I think that works in a lot of ways in a more interesting way than the streaming box. Because right there, what you're looking at is a very traditional way of selling this, right? Oh, if you have an old thing, or you're just joining, or you have some kids who want to play something, get them the Xbox One S. It doesn't need to be the most amazing thing, and they can play Halo, and it just won't look as good, and who cares? Then you get to that point of, all right, you want to move up in the next generation. You can get the Lockhart for just $400, right? And you look at it, and you're like, sure, I can, but I'm making these concessions on it. I don't have the disk drive. It's only doing 1080p, whatever the hell else is going to be the limitations on it. And you start thinking, well, it's just $100 to the best Xbox on the market. It's just $100 to Xbox Series X. And then most people, if you're gamers and you're saving your money and you're getting ready to do this, maybe they start wavering and they go for the bigger, better box. That's you raise a good question here on all the rumors we've heard. What is the purpose of the Lockhart? Is the Lockhart meant to be a digital box that you can just download your games to, no disk drive, we knocked off X amount of money? Or is it meant to be, hey, here is this drop-dead gorgeous price for something you can stream your games to, and maybe it has a little bit of hard drive in there, hard drive space for you to download something or do whatever with? Like, it's so fascinating because we're still talking about things we don't fully understand, because even like yesterday when we were talking about the introduction of xCloud to Xbox Live or Xbox Gold, right? Or to, you know, Game Pass bundling Xbox up Game Pass xCloud. Sorry. Game Pass Ultimate for $15 bundling up that. Suddenly, keep in mind then, for us sitting here and be like, oh, well, you know, then Lockhart's only $99 and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's not even what we're talking about anymore. Because it means that, hey, do you have a computer, a phone, and a controller? Any combination, or, you know, do you have a computer, or do you even have a phone, or do you just have a tablet or whatever? If you have a controller or don't, you can use on-screen touches for that. Like, for $15, you have your portal and everything on Game Pass, including Halo Infinite, including all this stuff. Like, I think when we talk about Lockhart, I think we're so hung up on that original report, right? That was like Anaconda and Lockhart, and there's going to be this beefy one, there's going to be this streaming one. When in reality, for the people who really care about streaming and want to do that, I think there's going to be two camps. The people like me that want to play their games on the go and have their fancy boxes at home. And then the people who are in a financial situation where $15 is totally cool, whereas not hundreds of dollars and a subscription and, you know, whatever else. I think you get to this point that the original vision we all had for Lockhart of being a streaming box is kind of superseded by xCloud. Because you have, chances are, a smartphone, a tablet, a computer that can go in and do this xCloud stuff in September once it's in Game Pass Ultimate. And so then I think the more important thing to Microsoft becomes, okay, cool, let's get a cheaper option, but not dirt cheap, that we can have there so you don't want to spend that much money. You get the Lockhart and it's no disc. Or you look a little bit ahead and you say, well, $100 isn't that much different.
Yeah. And that's also kind of my thing with Lockhart, and if it is or is not a streaming box, right, is like the way I've been framing Microsoft's strategy in my head this whole time is them having the case to make of, hey, we have the most powerful console, but also we have the cheapest ways for you to also get into our ecosystem if you want to get into it in other ways also. And so, you know, playing xCloud through your laptop or through your smartphone, like, in my mind, those are the cheapest options you can go in terms of getting into the Xbox ecosystem. And so, like, I feel like the argument there on the Microsoft side of things is, all right, for people who might see Series X at $500 or $600 or however much you charge for it, for people who say that is too much, or like $100 too much or $200 too much, what is the next option we can provide them that may not be the Xbox One S, because that still feels like last generation of them. And cutting out Xbox One X and replacing that with this new middle tier, I think makes the most sense for them. I think that lines up perfectly with what their vision is, that it's hard for me to think of anything else that it could be.
And in a similar vein, right, I think we're talking about xCloud and how it takes the place of the Lockhart, or what we thought the Lockhart box was. And, you know, I'm talking about PCs and phones and stuff. Like, again, this is step one. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they, I guarantee, are working on an xCloud smart TV app. They are working on getting this to every device they possibly can, so that xCloud is everywhere. I still hope and believe they're working with Nintendo on it, right? I pray to God they are, because I think that'd be so fucking bizarre and awesome to boot up your Switch and have it be a screen that you're using your Joy-Cons to play Xbox games on. I think that'd be fucking insane and rad. And that is definitely what Phil and Xbox's vision is for this, to put it on every screen. I'm sure they would love to have it on PlayStation, right? Which is not going to happen. But when they start getting those questions, and knock on wood, xCloud is a success and it works the way people want it to work, and everybody's impressed with it in September, and all these different things are happening, I think there's a real conversation there as to what the future is. And I think in the same way we were thinking about Lockhart on what the original rumors were years ago, we're still thinking of xCloud as this beta, weird supplement on your phone thing, when in reality, that is what they want with what we originally thought the Lockhart was, of, hey, it's dirt cheap. Get into the ecosystem. Because again, this is exactly what they're fucking talking about, right? Hey, I don't play Xbox. I don't do this, but I have a PC and I have a phone. And so it's only $15. And I'm sure they'll do some ridiculous offer for $1 to get it and you're in or whatever. You get in there, you start playing, you're like, holy shit, this is actually really cool. And I'm playing all these games, and what a great deal. You resubscribe, maybe you resubscribe again. And finally you start going, well, all right, cool. Like, this is fun. There's a little bit of lag here though. Like, why don't I buy a box? And then we're into this exact conversation of like, I'll just buy the Xbox One S. And you look at it, you're like, well, $100 up from there is the Xbox Lockhart. And then you go, well, $100 up from there is the Xbox Series X. And how much am I going to do? And blah, blah, blah. This is all perfect world scenario. This is all exactly what we were talking about yesterday, when somebody was like, "Why? Aren't they worried about money of putting their games on Game Pass?" And it's like, no, they're worried about getting you converted to being an Xbox player and being in the Xbox ecosystem and spending all your money there.
Greg, speaking of next-gen hardware, story number three, what was up with that Jeff Keighley PS5 DualSense hands-on demo that he did?
He played it. Confirm rubber ducks. Rubber ducks, everybody.
Rubber ducks, everybody. I keep wanting to call it Astroworld. Astro's Playroom. Astroworld is the name of an A$AP Rocky album. Or not A$AP Rocky, a fucking Travis Scott album. So I'm pulling this from... they're rappers, Greg. They're artists. I'm pulling an article from GameSpot titled PS5 DualSense Controller: Everything We Learned During Today's Stream. This is by Chris Barrera and James Carr at GameSpot. Jeff Keighley today hosted a hands-on reveal stream for PS5's DualSense Controller, sharing some new details about what to expect from Sony's new gamepad. A brief side-by-side comparison showed that the DualSense is physically larger than the PS4's controller, weighing a bit more and feeling like it has more heft. The integrated speaker is said to have a wider range of sound, and that the sounds it emits tie in with what the haptic feedback is doing, at least in Astro's Playroom, a free game that is pre-installed on PS5. According to Jeff Keighley, it's a multi-hour game rather than a quick tech demo. After describing what it's like to use the controller, Keighley shared slices of gameplay footage of him playing Astro's Playroom with the new controller. The game is set up like different components of a computer, with a CPU lobby area and a cooling station area. One section showcased the adaptive triggers, with Keighley describing the tension he felt in each one as he used them while controlling a character whose body consisted of a large spring. Next, he spoke with PlayStation Worldwide head of marketing Eric Lempel. He said that Astro's Playroom is intended to show off the benefits of the controller and various features of the system. An earlier version of the game was taken to developers earlier in development as the PS5 was introduced to them. In terms of the design changes to the controller itself, Lempel talked about Sony wanting to iterate upon the established DualShock design. Greg, did you get to watch the stream this morning?
Oh, I did. You think I'd miss the Jeff Keighley stream? All right? I was excited. I was waiting for Alf to pop up and give me his thoughts on it, though.
Yeah, sadly, no Alf, which was slightly upsetting to me. What were your thoughts on the stream?
It's the traditional thoughts of like, man, this is so hard. This is the pandemic part of it, right? Of how hard this is to show a controller and talk about it, right? And it was like, I'm glad he played something. I'm glad, you know, they talked a bit about that. But like, I, you know, it's how do you show a controller? And like when he was talking about the haptic triggers and he mentioned pulling back on a bow, I was like, oh my God, can we get away from this one example of how do you, and I'm, that's not me knocking Jeff. That's not me knocking Jeff at all. Obviously, it's one of the ones that makes the most sense of how to do it. But it's just like every time we've heard about this fucking controller, I've heard
like
about
how many games are going to have
goddamn bow strings. I thought it was cool to see it compared right there with the DualShock 4. I liked him talking about how it's a little bit heftier, but it doesn't feel too much. I liked seeing the side-by-sides. I liked getting, you know, just seeing something outside of a render, something outside of a promotional image that PlayStation has touched up or moved around or given you no real sense of scope or scale for it. It was just nice to see that. You know, Astro's Playroom looked like cool. I liked that. I liked the way he described it of like, you know, it's a bunch of callbacks to PlayStation's history. I was like, oh, what does that mean? And then, yeah, you jump in there and it is the rubber duckies from Super Rub-A-Dub from PlayStation 3, infamous PlayStation 3 PSN game, and then having him unlock a PS3 at the end and shit. It's like, all right, that's kind of crap. I'll play and like hopefully platinum and have a good time with.
Honestly, like seeing the Astro stuff had me a bit like bummed a bit because.
What'd you want to like, play? Horizon?
No, but like, I'm glad he demoed Astro because that's a game that I've been excited for, but it's the fact that Astro seemed the more and more he showed of it, the more and more I was like, oh, this very much seems like a PlayStation 5, like they go out of their way to say like, oh, this isn't a tech demo, this is like a multi-hour experience, but you're running around the cooling station and like you're showing me the CPU level and it's like, all right, I don't know if this was the way to go with this franchise to make it like.
But I mean, that's where they started, right? I mean, Rescue Mission was the outlier. That's not the true to form. Now, granted, you would hope they would have seen the success there and done something different with it. But again, this is a tech demo. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I understand it's a game, and as Jeff said, it's gonna be. It's not a small experience. It's a multi-hour thing. But like, it's still just a tech demo for the controller to talk and squawk at you, and you to see colors and understand the haptic triggers and all the basically understand why this controller costs more and you should buy more.
Yeah, but I don't like, but that my that's my thing though, is I don't think it needs to be just like, I don't think they need to lean into the tech demo side of it, because when I think of Mario, for example, right, like an amazing platformer, Mario Odyssey is kind of a tech demo for the Switch. Like it showcases the motion in quite a few different ways. Like it very much is like a hey, this is what the Switch can do kind of thing. And I like Nintendo kind of does that a lot with a lot of their first party stuff. But they also add their own individuality and personality there that separates their games from just being tech demos and shows them as like, oh no, these are actual like incredible games that take advantage of what the hardware has to offer.
Sure.
About Rescue Mission in VR, I feel like did a very similar thing of like, yeah, when you go into a level, Astrobot literally like steps out of your PlayStation 4 controller and like you use the touchpad to like flick him off, you flick him off of the PS4 controller.
Yeah, off the pad.
Like all the new mechanics they showcase are just different functions of the PSVR thing, but they didn't it wasn't necessarily like, all right, here's a world and this world is the inside of your PS4. You know, like I feel like there's certain individuality they could have with Astrobot that doesn't necessarily connect it with us looking at it as like, all right, cool.
At some point we have to take our medicine, right? Hey, they're giving you a new controller on a new console. They want you to do all this new fucking stupid shit you probably don't want to do, right? I would much rather have that medicine cordoned off to a game that is just Astro's Playroom. It's a get in there, dick around, see what it is. Hopefully it's like Welcome Park or whatever and has a bunch of easy trophies or whatever. Like, I'd rather that than the first fucking wave of first-party games have this shit shoehorned in and have it be Uncharted, where Uncharted 1, where I'm aiming the only way to throw grenades at launch was to aim with the 6-axis, rather than it be Infamous Second Son, where it's like, all right, cool, shake up your controller like a spray can and do this. And it's just, I think you might have done something here too. It's just like, I don't need all these gimmicks in that kind of game. Like, I don't like the idea that this thing that immediately, I think, and maybe it's a personal preference, as is everything in a video game, but something that immediately pulls me out of the experience and reminds me that I'm playing a video game in my living room, jerking off with this controller. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want that. Just let me be in the world. Let me be, and like that stuff. And you're talking about, you know, Astrobot Rescue Mission, you know, being a tech showcase for what you can do with that. That's, you know, years after launch, we've already had it. We've already had all these speed bumps and learning curves to get there. That's why I think you should never force these people to put this stuff in there. And I know I'm using force loosely. I obviously was not in any of the rooms when they're like, Sucker Punch, you have to do it this way. Naughty Dog, you have to do it this way. And even though now Naughty Dog, Neil Druckmann would light a cigar with $1,000 bill and say, get the fuck out of here. But like, you know, there's all these different ways for that to happen. And I do think I'd rather see it all cordoned off here and then let it figure out people how they want to use that stuff. Like what we were just talking about with Ghost of Tsushima, where it is, you know, push up for the wind, clean your blade by swiping right, bow by going, you know, swiping down, like that kind of stuff. And even Days Gone, which had a great use of the touchpad in the cool, it takes you to different sections of the menu depending on when you swipe it and how you swipe it.
So regarding this Jeff Keighley Summer Games Fest PlayStation 5 controller showcase thing that he did, we have two questions, one from DJ Bradshill and the other from Boards and Zero, who write in with somewhat similar questions, so I'm going to get both of them in here. DJ Bradshill wrote into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, what's up, guys? I've got a two-parter here. Was it just me, or was Jeff's hands-on with the DS with the DualShock 5, or I guess DualSense, kind of lame? Don't get me wrong, the new design of the DualShock, it keeps calling it the DualShock, new design of the DualSense is super cool, but the features are essentially the same as the DualShock 4. But with new haptics, Xbox One controller already has this, new microphone, and better speaker. Personally, I didn't feel like this warranted its own event. Second, does it seem like Keighley's Summer of Games event is a bit skewed more towards Sony? I'm super excited for what both companies are bringing to the table this fall, but he's hyped the Sony events through the roof, including today's hands-on, and has barely been boosting Xbox's press releases and upcoming event on the 23rd. Just wanted to see if I'm the only one who has noticed this and get your guys' perspective on the DualSense. And then to bring in Bortson00's question, Bortson00 writes in and says, good morning, Blessing and Greg. Jeff, Summer Games Fest Keighley, today did one of the most insane demos ever. He described what a controller feels like while playing a game. Now, I get that explaining a controller is part of selling why people need a new game console, but why did Sony go that 30-second CGI trailer we showed during PS5 event was too little? We needed about 8 minutes of Jeff Keighley talking about it. Did Sony make a mistake wanting to do this, or is this just something we had to get due to the COVID times? Thanks, Boards and 00. So, Greg, what's your kind of takeaway from the way this showcase kind of happened? Because, like, I don't think it was bad by any means. I personally, like, I thought it was fine. But what's your take on
this? There's a lot of questions here to unpack. So, I mean, to start from where you're jumping off of, this is as good as it could have been. Like, there's no way to, I think, live stream someone using a controller and not being able to play Spider-Man Miles Morales, not be able to play even a PlayStation 4 game on it and talk about how different. You need to play something, and obviously they're bundling it with the Astro's Playroom, so you understand what's going on. There is no way for you to have somebody playing that controller and have the content be fascinating. Like, if we had done it, like, that's the other thing too. He's like, I don't think this required its own event. Ladies and gentlemen, as a business owner who is a, I guess, media company, is that what you call it? Kind of funny? But like, as somebody who makes podcasts and YouTube videos, like, people are ravenous for PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X content. And so, like, if Sony would have hit us up and been like, hey, do you want to live stream using the controller for the first time? I would have been like, fuck yes, send me that thing. You know what I mean? And I would have done it differently. I would have had a camera on my hands the entire time, right? I would have done more, I think, just while I'm playing Astrobot, da, da, da. Like, these are little things to do, because even that I don't think would have been that interesting to see my thumbs move around and like, oh man, he's hitting the buttons and it's happening on screen. Like, it's whatever. Like, I think that this is as good as you can get for something you can't go touch, that you can't go to a PAX and feel, that you can't even, I think, it obviously, you know, and Jeff mentioned it in his video, right? He started up and he's like, yeah, you know, this is cool that it's here. Usually it's, you know, me and a bunch of other journalists around each other. Like, that's what this normally would have been. We would have all gone to LA or New York or at Judges Week or E3. We would have all used it, and then we all would have come back, and you would have gotten glancing mentions on Podcast Beyond and in previews on GameSpot and over on Kind of Funny, like, dude, yeah, we played whatever, this demo and stuff. I really liked how the controllers felt different, or the haptic things. And overall, yeah, the controller feels cool. It's a little bit heavier. But back to the game, da 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 da. Like, this is so the vegetable on the plate. The video, you know what I mean? Like, when we're talking about brand new console launches, you're talking about games. Because, okay, we've seen the PlayStation 5, and until we can see it on an entertainment center next to a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox One, or even like if the way it would have been in classic years, go to E3 and have that glass case that we all go up and take photos of around, and all the accessories laid out, and all, you know, the different skins, and have it next to a PS1 and all that stuff. Like, now that we've seen it, until you can do those things, what does it matter? And so, like, Jeff getting it, holding up, talking about the weight, putting it next to things, like, he's doing the checklist of stuff that I would have done with it too. It's just like, how interesting can you make that content? And for full disclosure, if I get an email from PlayStation today that's like, hey, now that Jeff's revealed it, we're touring the controller, do you want to do a live stream? I'm going to be like, fuck yes, I want to. But it's just going to be the exact same thing I'm talking about, of me being like, yeah, it's got a good weight. Oh, when I pull back, like I'm pulling a bow. You know what I mean? Like, that's why it does it need to exist? No. Does anything we ever do need to exist? Probably not. Like, this is Summer Games Fest, and it is trying to make beats out of things that, you know, not necessarily would be beats before, and give everything their time in the sun. And it's interesting too, like, I'm reading between the lines in a lot of different ways, but in Jeff's video, he talks about like, hey, yeah, this is cool and unexpected, and I didn't expect this to happen this week. Like, that reads to me that PlayStation was back at HQ going like, all right, Xbox is getting a lot of juice. Xbox is saying a lot of cool things, maybe even before the Phil Spencer letter, right? But like, they're doing a lot of cool stuff. What can we do? Like, we could let Jeff use the controller. Okay, cool. That's great. That's easy. That's turnkey. He can talk to Eric. Great. That'll be great. Yeah. And like, you put that out, and it's a beat we talk about today to remind everybody that PlayStation 5 is a real thing that is coming, and next week's going to belong to Xbox. You know what I mean? But like, they still have it here. Like, I'm right there with everybody. If I watched it and I tuned out early, and I love Jeff and I love Eric, and it's just like, all right, cool. We're just talking marketing beats at this point or whatever. And I get that. Mm-hmm. Not that and I was cool to see it held up with stuff. It's cool to see it in Jeff's hand. It is what it is, but it's like, that's exactly what I expected out of it.
Yeah. And I mean, to the part of the question, right, that Borton00 has here, did Sony make a mistake wanting to do this, or is it just something we had to get due to COVID times? Like, I think this is 100% a thing we had to get due to COVID times. Like, in a regular world, like what you're saying, Greg, like, a wider amount of media would have gotten the chance to actually have hands-on with games and have hands-on with Astro's Playroom, and then like come back and talk about and write about the controller. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's still going to happen in some way. Like, I think I would hope that somehow, like, however way they need to make this happen, that press get hands-on with the DualSense controller before the PS5 actually comes out.
Sure.
But I think this early in the game, this is how you do it, and you want to be able to have like a consistent flow of marketing beats toward the ramp up to PlayStation 5, and this is just one of those. As far as like, you know, does it seem like Jeff Keighley is a bit skewed towards Sony? I think that's more so him, you know, reading interest and reading like what the events are. And so if you look at this combined with the last few months of content we've gotten, as far as the Xbox third party games showcase for next gen and the Unreal Engine 5 thing and PlayStation 5's presentation that had all the games coming to the console, right? Like, I feel like so far we have gotten more on like a showcase level, more exciting content from PlayStation. Like, you know, especially with that Unreal Engine 5 thing. Like, I remember vividly.
Oh, sorry.
Or no, go for it.
I was gonna say, is that what you think pushes it over the line of like what? Because if you had asked me, I'd be like, no, he's covering what's happening. He's not making this stuff happen. Like, it's you know what I mean? Like, it's just how it's been. Like, he's covering what's covering. But I understand bringing up the Epic thing and the Unreal thing and the way they did, you know, talk at length about how into that they were, and that not Jeff, but like the Epic people whose name is now escaping. But you understand what I'm saying? Because even like, clicking around trying to look back here at different months of what happened. Like, I subscribed to the Google calendar, right? For Summer Game Fest, the name I can never remember. But like, it doesn't, I mean, I feel like right now you go to Summer Game Fest and the Xbox event's on there. When I look back at the Xbox event that came before, it's on the list here. I don't feel like he's skewing. Of course, I'm Greg Miller, PlayStation fanboy number one on the internet, so why would I know? But even looking at this, like, it's going backwards on the calendar. PlayStation 5, Stadia Connect, Hideo Kojima interview. So Death Stranding, okay. But again, that's fucking Kojima, and it was coming to PC.
I don't even count that. But I think it's less of a thing of like, Jeff likes PlayStation more of a thing of there's just more exciting PlayStation news to talk about in the way that it's being presented. Like, that the Unreal Engine 5 thing, I think Jeff hyped out of this world. But I think that's something that kind of should have been hyped out of this world. Like, I think that was a really exciting thing.
Yeah.
That plus the PlayStation event was a very exciting thing. Jeff getting the exclusive on the controller for him is a really exciting thing. And so I understand why these specific moments are being hyped by Jeff the way that he's hyping them up.
And it's the thing about it, though, is just like, I feel like, and again, maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm skewed, but like, he's hyping up what he's given and what he's able to get. Like, if you think it's skewed too much towards Xbox, then that gets the question for Xbox. Why aren't they giving Jeff Keighley more stuff? Like, I mean, the controller here, I think, again, is a not weird, because again, this needs to happen and needs, but I mean, like, I don't think any of us are sitting around going like, this is a huge success. Now, it's a huge success. We're all talking about it. We all watched it. We all have thoughts on the controller now. Like, that's what PlayStation wanted out of this. And that's why Jeff knows there's an audience that wants to know that stuff. But like, he still has the Xbox Game Showcase on here. I'm sure when Phil and team have stuff they want to show him, they're going to go to him and show it, and he'll put it through as part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and I think I'm with you there, right? In terms of he's hyping up what he's been given. And I think that kind of reflects on how people might be seeing that. But like, this isn't something that I've even thought about until this question was brought up of like how, I guess, both companies are being represented by Jeff Keighley. But again, I think that's just how it shakes out.
Real quick, if I might, the one and only number one games journalist, Andy Cortez, is in the chat right now. And he says, I love my DualSense controller so far. Because if you saw Andy got one as well, he put it up. You can go to his Twitter page and see it and go to see him on Twitch. But also, Andy, I sent you a DM. It's lengthy on Slack if you can look at it.
Oh. Story number four. Dreams wins Game of the Year at Games for Change Festival. This is Matthew Handrahan at gamesindustry.biz. Media Molecules Dreams picked up an award for Game of the Year at this year's Games for Change Festival. The PS5 or PS4 exclusive was also named the most innovative game at the ceremony, making Media Molecule one of the two studios to receive two awards. The other was That Game Company, which was given Best Gameplay for Sky Children of Light, which also won the vote for the People's Choice Award. The latter prize received 14,000 votes, around 14 times more than the amount registered at Games for Change 2019. The main reason for that spike in interest was that this year's event took place online due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Typically, Games for Change is held in New York City due to its association with the Parsons School of Design. Games for Change is a nonprofit organization established to champion immersive entertainment with a positive real-world impact. All the award winners, which are listed below, reflect that core objective. And so the winners are as follows. Game of the Year was Dreams, Media Molecule. Most Innovative Game, Dreams, Media Molecule. Best Gameplay, Sky, Children of Light from That Game Company. People's Choice, Sky, Children of Light. Most Significant Impact, Sea of Solitude. Best Learning Game, Rabbids Coding from Ubisoft, which is a game that I didn't know existed until literally just now. Best Student Game, Resilience from Sungrazer Studio in Drexel University. And then Best XR for Change, The Holy City from Nimrod Shannett. So congratulations to all those winners. And then the article continues to say that Gordon Bellamy received the Vanguard Award for a long career in which he has represented the interests of underserved. I kept reading that as underdeserved, and I was like, that's not what it says. Underserved communities, notably LGBTQ plus people, as the CEO of Gay Gaming Professionals. Humble Bundle also received the G4C Giving Award for its ongoing commitment to donating to charitable causes, which included 3.5 million euros raised through a game bundle for Black Lives Matter. So congratulations, all.
Huzzah!
Huzzah. Greg, I'm super excited to see what games win the future Games for Change event, but that's so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Warhammer 40,000 Mechanicus for PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. Drake Hollow for Xbox One and PC. Ghost of Tsushima for PS4. Ultra Hat Dimension for Switch. Starlit Adventures for Switch. Paper Mario the Origami King for Switch, Death Come True for PC, Ultra Hat Dimension for Switch, Fault for PC, AI for PC, and then Necro Barista is out today for Apple Arcade. New dates, we got Kindagawa Jet Girls is coming to PS4 and PC on August 25th. Paw Patrol Mighty Pups Save Adventure Bay launches on November 6, 2020 on Nintendo Switch, PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
Now, and it's worth pointing out for all the Paw Patrol fans out there that I took that from the press release, and right before it says it's currently titled Paw Patrol Mighty Pups Save Adventure Bay. So it might get changed. Oh. The title might not be locked in.
Whoa, you think that's a copyright thing? You think they're in a fight with another Mighty Pups?
No, they are Paw Patrols. I don't know. They already had a logo and everything, but it did say that it is currently titled. I'm like, all right. Whoa.
And then Rogue Legacy 2's early access has been delayed from July 23rd to August 18th. Greg, now it's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Of course, your support means the world to Kind of Funny because of you, the audience. Kind of Funny is able to do cool things like launch a new studio, have full Last of Us playthroughs, Last of Us 2 playthroughs with Andy Cortez, have awesome guest weeks on Kind of Funny Games Daily, launch a new Xbox podcast with Alana Pierce, Snow White Mike, and Gary Witta, and more. Of course, you can head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames if you want to support the show, if you want to support Kind of Funny Games Daily and all the content that we have on this side of Kind of Funny, and you can gain special perks like exclusive content, becoming a Patreon producer, and more. Once again, just go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to support the show and learn more about what we have to offer. Greg.
Yes.
James writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, with the DualSense controller having a hands-on with the summer games, with the summer games and Xbox being a part of it with their game reveals, do you think that we could get the PS5 and Series that we could get PS5 and Series X news during Gamescom opening night? Greg, what's your we've had prediction episodes of Gamescast, but like I don't think we've actually like sat down and really focused too hard on opening night live. What do you think is the caliber of news we're gonna get?
This James's question, you think you could get news? Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're gonna get PS5 and Series X news there. I don't think it'll be anything major from Sony and Microsoft. I think it'd be smaller stuff from them. Maybe updates on their launch lineups and just things you've already seen. I expect, you know, third parties to make good use of Opening Night Live. I expect more European third parties to make a good use of Opening Night Live, as we've seen before. We talked about this, I forget what show, but we did talk about last year's Opening Night Live, right? I think it's going to be a good show. I think, you know, Jeff Keighley's hyping it as, you know, the finale, right, of Summer Game Fest. And so I think you're going to see stuff there, but I think Sony and Microsoft in particular are going to hold the big stuff for themselves. Like, you know, I think they're going to hold off and have the price and release date. That'll be stuff they put out. I don't think they want to go through in a giant press conference and do that, just because on a few different reasons they don't want to share the spotlight with other people. They also, these are the platform holders, right? They don't want to drown out the games that are coming to the platforms, and they also don't want to be included in the rundown of news. They want their own news beat for something that big.
I wouldn't be surprised if we got a big reveal from Xbox, but I don't know what it would be, because I don't think it would be like a first party game, because I think they're really going to lay everything out next week at their first party game showcase.
Of course, yeah.
I could see some kind of like Lockhart reveal type thing at Opening Night Live, based on just what we got at Game Awards. Like, I think Xbox are in a place where they're making good moves, and they're being consistently good about open and honest messaging, and you know, putting out services out there that people are into, and really creating ground for themselves as making a case of why you should invest in Xbox. I think part of that comes with them being scrappy and then being like, all right, yeah, let's just show up at this thing that people might not expect us at. And so, like, if at Opening Night Live we got a first look at what Lockhart looks like or any sort of announcement regarding that, I could see it.
Interesting. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. I don't necessarily expect anything big from PlayStation, aside from maybe like a gameplay demo for an upcoming game. Maybe like
Miles,
I could see Miles Morales,
like that. Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like a gameplay demo of that, or maybe
I think that's the more traditional way for first parties to use it. Is like, yeah, hey, yeah, Here's something you've seen before, like exactly, that you know about before, and we're giving you a deeper dive. We're doing an extended demo. We're doing whatever like that.
Especially stuff coming out this fall, like Godfall. I kind of expect to see there. maybe stuff from like Jet the Far Shore or like Bugsnax or stuff that we know are slated for this fall. Like, I think that's one of the, that's one of the last big events we have remaining. And so
and that makes sense, right? You're talking about the indies that have already been uplifted, right? Like, if you were gonna double dip on that, probably double dip around there.
Now it's time to squad up. Block Fighter writes in with a squad up on Stadia and says, I'm just starting out on the Division 2 and I hear it's much better in co-op. And so if you want to play with Block Fighter on Stadia, add them. Block Fighter, all one word, exactly how it sounds. B-L-O-C-K, Fighter, all one word. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Charles Jacobson says, Xbox also doesn't have any major changes to their controller. So Jeff, having hands-on wouldn't do a lot, which is a good point. I actually meant to bring that up, but I forgot to. But yeah, like, you're not really going to have an exciting kind of hands-on.
Hamburger button still right where it was.
Yeah, like, the only change really is like that the share button that they've added right toward the middle of it. And then Nailbot writes in and says, Drake's Hollow got delayed to an undetermined launch date due to internal issues. Gresik says, I went to Drexel University. It's pronounced more like Drexil than Drexel. So Drexil. Drexil.
That's on them, all right?
Drexil. John
BX30. I know what that means.
John BX30. Drexel sounds like a medicine I take. John BX32 says, Jeff Keighley is hosting the Xbox Game Showcase pre-show. And then links to a tweet from Xbox. Also, everything you need to know about Lockhart is right here. And then Windows Central has an article is what John BX3 is saying. Looks like
but that isn't that the usual? That's just the rumored stuff. That's what you're talking about. There's so many rumors.
Yeah, because nothing's been actually confirmed.
Windows Central does great work. Don't get me wrong, but just heads up.
That's it for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Next week's hosts for the show look like this. Monday, it's me and Tim. Tuesday, it's me and Emron. Wednesday, it's Greg and Gary. Thursday, it's Greg, Tim, me, Andy, and Snowbike Mike. That's right. We're doing the post show for the Xbox Game Showcase.
That is something different than usual. Yeah, the Games Daily that day on the 23rd will be the post show. So nothing changes for you as a Games Daily fan. It's just usually we do those and record them as the Gamescast, but it just doesn't make sense seeing as how we have an Xcast now. And of course, this is going to be the news of the 23rd. So we might as well do it right there.
Exactly. And then Friday, of course, is going to be me and Greg back at it like a bad habit. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the server level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.